Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Racing Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Racing Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. We are coming to you tonight live from Atlanta, Georgia. Got a very special guest that we're going to have on with us tonight. Very excited to hear from her and to find out what else that they have going on up that way. But without any further ado, before we jump into all of that, we're going to start the show off as we normally always do. I'm going to go ahead and bring on my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Chuck, are you there?
Yeah, good evening, Rico. How are you?
Doing well. Very excited for tonight's program. How's my audio? Okay, am I coming in clear?
Yeah, you're coming in pretty good. A lot better than you do some nights, I gotta tell you.
I want to double check. I'm testing out a different little rig, so hopefully this works out all right.
Okay, no, you're sounding good, buddy.
Sounds great. Well, okay. Let's jump right into it, starting out, as we always do, with this week's USDA truck rate report. This report for this week, there's a link that's up for your viewing pleasure over on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page. You go over there, you click on the link, it'll take you to the detailed version of this report. But this report this week, man, we got stuff scattered all over the place. So let's just jump into it. We got a couple of markets that are showing outright shortages. Those markets are Southeast Missouri and Southwest Indiana and Southeast Illinois. Those are your markets that are showing outright shortages. So if you're working the spot market, the main reason that we cover this particular report, if you are working those spot markets, kind of gives you somewhat of a little bit of a cheat sheet to kind of get into, maybe position yourself in a market to where you may be able to push the rates in your favor. Other markets that are showing a slight shortage, Delaware, Maryland, and Eastern Shore, Virginia right now. Those areas are showing a slight shortage. Areas that you may want to avoid, stay away from, South Vidalia District, Georgia. They are showing a slight surplus of trucks. Southern New Mexico, showing a slight surplus of trucks. Other areas that you might want to avoid, they are showing an outright surplus of trucks. Lower Rio Grande Valley, Texas, and Mexico crossing through Texas. Those all areas are showing outright surpluses or slight surpluses. So you know that if you're working the spot market, you know that that is a creature of supply and demand. So you want to be where the shortages are so that your services are in demand and not where the surpluses are, where your services may not be as valued or needed. So, Chuck, anything you want to say about that before we jump over into the DAT report?
No, you know what? Just be careful, even going into those areas that are showing shortages of trucks, because you may get there if they're loading melons. I can't caution you enough. If the shortage of trucks is because the melons are coming out of there, which I think they are, and they get some bad rain, they won't be picking any melons, and you won't get any melons, and you'll have 5,000 trucks down there, and you'll have four loads, and then the price just tumbles. So just be careful. We have to drive home the fact this is a guideline. This isn't, the show is live, but sometimes our information can be a day or two or three old. So just be careful.
Exactly. You got right now, especially down in the Southeast, certain parts of the Southeast. And like I said, if you click on the report, you'll see exactly what is moving where. But you got a little bit of squash. Some berries are moving out of the Southeast right now, as well as melons. So, but like I said, you can click on the report, and that'll give you more detailed information. Moving quickly, jumping over to the DAT trend lines report, load-to-truck ratios increased in the last week of the month. With higher volumes in key markets, the urgency subsided by the end of the week, leading to a softer start to August. National average rates in July were down compared to June, but van and reefer rates were higher. Were higher than May's average. Flatbed rates largely paralleled May's numbers. With that being said, we're looking at a fuel price actually virtually unchanged. It went down by 0.3 percentage points, so we're still showing a national average diesel price at $3.03 per gallon. Jumping over into the spot markets by dry vans, the rate-wise across the country, coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States, we're showing an average spot market rate of $1.60 per mile. Dropping down to the southeast and mid-Atlantic states, we show average outbound spot market rates at $1.85. Coming out of the Midwest, we show average spot market rates for dry vans at $2 per mile. That leads the nation. Dropping down to the south central portion of the United States, we show an average of $1.78 per mile. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we show an average of $1.78 for dry vans. Moving right along, jumping over into the flatbed segment of the DAT report. Coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States, we show an average spot market rate of $2.10 per mile. Dropping down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern portion of the United States, outbound spot market for flatbeds at $2.39. Moving up into the Midwest, showing outbound spot market rates at $2.40 per mile. Down in the south central portion of the United States, outbound spot market rates are coming in at $2.26 on average, and coming out of the West Coast, outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $2.02. And finally, wrapping up, jumping over into the temperature controlled or reefer portion of the report, we're showing outbound spot market rates coming out of the Northeast at $1.80 per mile. Coming out of the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern portion of the United States, we show average spot market rates at $2.07. Jumping up into the Midwest, we're showing outbound spot market rates averaging at $2.33. That leads the nation. Dropping back down to the south central portion of the United States, we're showing outbound spot market rates at $2.07. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we show outbound spot market reefer rates coming in at $2.25 per mile. And I tell you, for the past few weeks, we have been very fortunate. There have been no new entries on the bad broker report. Hopefully that trend continues. We don't want to, you know, hopefully we've kind of shaken out most of that and everybody's kind of handling their business. So that is always welcome news. And with that being said, covering all of those topics, tonight we have a special guest. Many of you remember our good friend, close friend to the show, George Heck, Blue Heron Logistics. Unfortunately, we lost George some time ago, and but that is, you know, as sad as that is, there's a silver lining to that cloud, and we have the next best thing to George. We have his wife Kim is joining us tonight on the Rates and Lanes podcast. So let's give a big round of applause if we can, virtually for Kim Heck. Kim, good evening. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you for taking time out to come on with us. So,
Kim, it's wonderful to have you on the show. I've got to just say that.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. So catch us up, Kim. Tell us, you know, give us some insight as to how things have been. I don't want to rehash anything that's too emotional or anything like that, but tell us about how you guys have been progressing, some of the things that you guys have been up to, and just give us an overall update on the status of Blue Heron Logistics.
Sure. So probably back at the beginning of the year, things were difficult. You know, I was ready to throw in the towel, just because I didn't want to deal with it. But then you know, I had George in the back of my head telling me that I could do it. And then I just started with my team of people. We started going out and meeting with different customers and just letting them know that we're still in business and we're still here to serve them. Our customer service standards are still the same. And we've actually expanded our customer base, which has been amazing. And we've been growing. Now, I've had a hard time finding full-time drivers, but I've actually have this really great pool of part-time drivers. So as I have loads come up, I have a great number of people that I can call upon to cover all the loads. So things have been actually going really, really well.
Brilliant. That's a brilliant strategy.
Yeah, thank you. Well, it kind of grew out of necessity. I mean, you know, there was people that I knew and that George and I actually had known for years that would be very happy to be on the road on occasion, but just didn't want to be on the road all the time. And, you know, especially with the specialized freight that we move, we typically get quite a bit of notice when a load is going to move. So it's pretty easy to kind of book time for part-time people. So, yeah, it's been a great strategy that's been working.
Well, that is wonderful. And how many trucks are you operating right now?
I have 3 trucks. And then, I actually own 4 trucks, but I have 3 that are on the road. One of them is a fun cab over truck that George thought would be
right.
Fun. But, yeah, but that one I don't have on the road yet.
Right. And you know what? And we've talked about this recently. Don't ever get caught up in having to have the biggest fleet. It's how much money you put through the till. It has not, you know, in the old days it was, he's nothing. You know, he's only got 10 trucks or he's only got 50 trucks or he's, you know, if you go to the conventions, that guy's nothing. He's a has-been. He's only got 300 trucks. I have 310. I'm a somebody.
Right.
You know, all this nonsense. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether you have 1 truck or 10,000. It's how much money you make. So don't ever get caught up in that one, I can tell you.
Yeah, no, and I won't. Well, and I can expand that a little further to say that I also think it's, you know, how good are you? Like, how good is your company? What's your reputation like? How well do you take care of your customers? Like, yeah, I don't think how many trucks you have is really a good measure.
No. You know, there's several. You know, we see it all the time. I don't know what it's like where you are in upstate New York, but here in southern Ontario, it never fails to amaze me. You see these companies start out, and within 2 years, they have 150, 200 trucks, and then give them another 6 months, another year, and there's an auction sale. And this happens all the time.
Right. Well, growing too fast is not a good thing
right.
All the time.
No, it's never a good thing. It's because when you grow that fast, it's usually unmanaged growth, and the growing pains will kill you because it's unmanaged.
Yep, and I agree with that. I really do.
So tell us about this warehousing. I'm excited to hear this.
Sure. So George and I, we put together a business plan several years ago and just said, okay, well, we have the trucking company, but, you know, where do we want to go from there?
Right.
And we always thought warehousing made sense. And we started having a lot of our customers asking us if we had that capability. So then George just started talking to people and letting people know that he was looking or interested. And then after he passed away, one of the people that he had talked to approached me and said, you know, I'm really sorry about the timing, but I'm ready to sell. And I really thought about it. And it just, again, because I had so many customers that were interested in that type of service, it made sense. So
right.
I'm in the process of buying a warehouse and really expanding the Blue Heron business to kind of that next step.
That is fantastic. How big a warehouse is it?
It's about 16,000 square feet, so not
great
super
size.
Big, but it'll
no.
well, it'll service the clients that I'm targeting, It will really give them what they need. And there's also room for me to expand if I ever want to do that in the future, which is a really nice thing.
Oh, that is more. Is it right near where you are in upstate New York?
Yep. Yep, very close.
Oh, perfect. Oh, that's wonderful. I have to tell you, my experience with warehousing, we took 50,000 square feet because I needed the office space. And
okay.
I needed a place to park trucks and trailers. And I got to be honest with everybody. When I took this on 9 years ago, it was very sudden because the place we were in had a clause in the lease. If they ever needed it back, they could have it back in 90 days. After, and they assured me they would never want it back because it only had 9 doors. Well, sure enough, they needed it back, and we got the boot. And I found this place, which is the 50,000 square foot warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in my in our management team thought that I had just gone prematurely senile.
And sure.
I remember my, you know, my own family looked at me like, are you fit to lead this company? But I knew, you know, when you and I can't stress this enough for our listeners, when you're going to do something right and it feels right. In your heart, it feels right, do it. When you have nagging doubts, walk away. The little guy inside, the little person inside that tells you something's right or something's wrong, if it says it's
right.
wrong, it's wrong. And don't try to argue with the little guy inside, because the little guy inside knows. But when I saw this facility, even though it was an old manufacturing plant, I said, this will work. And you know that I called every customer I had, and you know, the odd one would give me a little bit of freight, but it wasn't much. I got to a point I was putting ads in Kijiji, which is a newspaper we have up here in Canada, a digital newspaper uh-huh. for people's boats and campers and things. And I created cash flow because this has beautiful drive-through doors. And we created some immediate cash flow doing that. And you know that it took a couple of years, but the last 2 years or so, I've pretty much been sold out. Where it's like standing
oh, nice.
Room only. So it does take some time sometimes, but 16,000 square feet, we've got that in, we've got a little bit more than that in Chicago, and it took us about 4 months. Now all of a sudden, the place is full. So, you know, 16,000 square feet is a great size because it's not overwhelming and it's manageable.
Right.
And,
yeah.
I,
and
think,
I actually
I think
already have clients in there. Like I already have clients that are right at the door. So I already pretty much have it full, which is great. I just need to move
wow.
into it now. Yeah. No, I mean, it's been good. Like you said, it's like having that, you know, little guy inside telling you that, you know what, go for it. Like, this is a good thing.
Yeah.
And then for me, I see a blue heron fly over and I know it's a good deal.
Then, you know, yep, exactly.
Yep.
You know, I got to tell you, Kim, the best things about having your own warehouse is for your trucks is it's quite often it's going to eliminate either your delivery cost or your pickup cost or both. So you're going to be delivering right to home base. Your drivers love it.
Right.
And it lowers your delivery cost for local deliveries.
Right. Right. So I'm really looking forward to it for so many reasons.
Yeah. How many doors?
I'm
one of. Go ahead, Rico. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just asking how many doors you have on this warehouse.
Yeah, so I have 4 dock doors, and then I have 2 doors on opposite sides where you can drive right in.
And can you drive a tractor trailer in?
Yeah.
And you could do service in there? Minor
yep.
service?
Yep, so
oh, wonderful.
If the weather stinks and we need to fix a trailer, we can do it. We can just pull it
well,
right
you
in.
You just won a lottery. If you can do that, you won a lottery.
Yes.
Look,
wow.
Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you.
So, Kim, maybe give our listeners maybe a little bit of a background on yourself as far as what's your background. Where did you what were you doing before, and you know what gave you
sure.
the Yeah, we'll start off with, I got a couple of different lines of questions I want to do because I want to try to inspire some of our other listeners and some other people to kind of maybe say, well, hey, maybe I can do more than what I'm doing as well. So yeah. So what was your background initially?
Sure. So my background actually, you know, we'll go way back to when I graduated from college. My first job was at Werner Enterprises. So I think most of you probably know Werner Enterprises are a full truckload carrier. I was a management trainee there. So I went there and I worked in every department, even went out on a truck trip with a female truck driver for 5 days, worked fixing trucks. Like, I worked everywhere, but ended up in what they called their marketing department, which was kind of their inside sales department. So my job was to basically match up trucks that were getting empty and loads that we had available in the Southern California, Arizona kind of territory. I love that job. It was fun. It was putting a puzzle together every day, and then it got messed up, and then I would re-put it back together. And then when times were slow, typically January, February timeframe, I would call up my customers that I, you know, had good relationships with and really worked hard to find loads for my empty trucks. Then, so that was in Omaha, Nebraska. Then I moved to Rochester and I worked at Xerox and a couple other companies here. I got my MBA, very fascinated in business. George and I met. George and I probably started 6 trucking companies over our 20 years together before we actually started Blue Heron. It was always kind of fun to put together a business plan and kind of figure out how we would do things. I worked at Overnight Transportation. I was in sales there for a period of time, which is where I met George. He was a warehouse manager. I was a sales rep for Overnight. Then I went to work and I worked at a bus company for a while. So I kind of always had this transportation in my background. When George and I started Blue Heron, I always did he was the sales guy. He was the driver. He was kind of the face of Blue Heron. I did a lot of the behind the scenes stuff, setting up the business and the books and all of that kind of stuff. Then it was just a matter of whatever needed to be done. We would figure out who was the best suited to do it. So that's essentially my background.
Wow.
Okay. So great. You were actually quite familiar with the industry, and that kind of gave you the tools to kind of continue on doing what you were doing. So that's great. So my next part of questioning is, you said that you're still expanding. You have actually expanded the customer base still. What advice would you give to someone else listening in that, they have a desire to want to do more as far as gaining their own direct customer clientele, but they're not really sure where to start or how to start? So as a female in a mostly male-dominated industry, what advice would you give, and maybe even some guys, maybe even you may have some people that are listening in with their wives or whatever. What advice would you give along those lines?
I would say don't ever be afraid to walk in and talk to somebody. I mean, I don't look at sales as sales. I look at sales as just having a conversation, just getting to know somebody, maybe walking in. You know, I've walked into a couple places, made cold calls, really just to find out, what does this company do? Who do I need to talk to? I realize somebody may not have time to talk to me right now, but who's my contact? And typically, if you're just there to kind of gather information, people are very willing to talk. They're typically very willing to take time to talk to you. And, you know, you have to remember, too, you're probably not going to get freight the first time. You're going to have to keep going back and kind of, you know, asking about what they have going on. And you just have to be very persistent. And when people tell you no, hey, that's okay. Just go back the next time, because you just never know. Like I said, a lot of the things that we do is specialized freight. So I will walk into a company that might make I don't know, parts that would really go with an LTL carrier, but I might walk in and just say, well, I see that you're expanding and growing. I'm not looking for your LTL freight, but what kind of machinery are you bringing in as you're growing? So you just kind of have to think outside the box a little bit also.
Right.
Great point.
Right. Learn, trying to figure out what questions to ask. And a lot of that is in a conversation, when you're having those conversations, listen to what they're telling you. They'll give you the information, but you have to, once you hear it, you have to know how to come back and repackage that into a question, so that you can get more information to get you to the point where you're talking about, where you can kind of figure out, okay, I see you're growing, so what kind of machine? That's a nice little tip to go along with that. Chuck, anything you want to add or you want to jump in on some of this?
No, I think Kim, from the sounds of it, and having had the pleasure and privilege of meeting her, she gets the whole sales cycle. That it's not about convincing somebody to use your services. It's about making friends that you didn't have when you walked in. That's what this whole thing is about. Making people trust you because you form a relationship. I was talking to one of my business partners today about the difference between contractual and transactional customers. And, you know, transactional customers are a pain in the neck because they'll leave you for 5 cents, and it costs you the same money to set up a transactional customer as it does a contractual customer, except your contractual customer is going to give you freight whenever they have it. Your transactional customer is only going to use you once because you were 3 or 5 cents or $2 cheaper. You don't need customers like that. And Kim has embraced this, and she's building her business around it to a point where, all of a sudden she's getting a warehouse that's going to be totally full, and she'll be paying off that building. This stuff works. People trust Blue Heron. They trust Kim. And that's what we have to that's what we have to do in this business, is build that trust. We're as good as our last load, and we always have to be good.
Well, and I think also that you have to make sure that if you say that you're going to do something, that you do it. One thing that we never do is we never promise something that we're not going to be able to keep. So if somebody wants a load picked up tomorrow, but I know I don't have a truck available, I'm going to tell them I can't pick your load up tomorrow, but can I pick it up on Friday? Because that's when I'm going to have somebody available. So I just find that you really have to be completely honest and completely transparent and let them set their expectations. If you set their expectations and they know what to expect and you deliver, I think that your relationship with your customer is going to go further than you would have ever dreamed.
100%. Because it becomes a partnership.
Right.
Okay. Without giving away too much of the secret sauce, how do you identify where you're not going after the commoditized freight, where you're not you're not talking to the people that everybody else is talking to? How do you identify this particular customer may be a good fit for you? How do you do that? How do you recognize those things?
Well, I guess a couple different ways. So the first thing is, customers that I already have, for instance, we moved some sculptures for an artist. Well, he's going to know other artists that move sculptures. So part of it is just asking people that already trust you if they can help you find new customers. The second thing that I find is don't always make assumptions, because you might look at a place that makes, toilet paper and applesauce, not realizing that, okay, well, wait a minute. They're building on a whole new building, and they're going to be bringing in all of this equipment. And so now you can maybe have that relationship bringing in their heavy equipment. And then maybe you find out that, oh, well, now you have this relationship with somebody that's bringing in this equipment, and quite often they have to use riggers. Well, now you have a relationship with the riggers that any time that they know of something big moving, they let you know so that you can quote it. So it's, again, it's just, it's relationships. It's just letting everybody know what you do and what you want to do, and not making assumptions.
Great. So I want to remind our listeners that are listening in, if you got a question or if you want to get in, you can press the number one. That gets you in the call queue, lets us know that you would like to join the conversation. So you guys are welcome to join the conversation as well. Chuck, you want to get in on something? You get in before we move along to the next?
Sure. You know, what do you find now is the toughest thing when you're operating this business? What's the toughest thing to contend with?
For me personally, my number one is drivers. I think I've kind of solved that for now. But it's difficult to, because we do some dedicated logistics also, so it's difficult to go out there and really sell some of the things I want to sell if I don't have full-time drivers. So I would say that is my number one. And then you're probably going to laugh at this, but another thing that I find really difficult is all the stinking paperwork. Oh, my gosh. I have no idea how many forms you have to file, and I think I filed something, but oh, no, that was that form. You need to file this form. So that has been quite a learning experience for me, the number of forms that are involved.
Oh, I got to laugh at that one. Kim, one of the reasons years ago, I got into this business way, way back in 1974 because it didn't have a lot of paperwork, and I hated paperwork, and God punished me, I'll tell you.
He did.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I was – I always wanted to drive a truck. I always wanted to own a trucking company from the time I was, like, 5 years old. And but when I was in my – I guess late teens, around the same time, I happened to stumble across auctioneering. And my life was going to take one of two paths. I was either going to become an auctioneer or own a trucking and logistics company. And I actually, it was really a toss-up. And I took the, I really loved driving and I loved trucks. And I realized being an auctioneer, although I loved being a ham, being an auctioneer wouldn't give me what I wanted, and being an auctioneer, it looked like I had more paperwork than being a than owning a truck and owning a truck line. Even didn't seem like a lot of paperwork. Man, was I ever wrong! And what happened? Every year, the paperwork gets worse and worse because you have every single government agency on both sides of the border, whether it's state, provincial, federal, municipal. Everybody wants a piece of your backside, and they all want paper, you know. And I think it was the great communications expert Marshall McLuhan who wrongly commented that there would be no such thing as paper. You know, come this century, and man, he was wrong, because we have more, although we do, you know, we do a lot of things that are paperless, we still have more paper than we've ever had. It's insane.
That is the truth.
There's no getting away from it.
No, not at all.
And, you know, are you, how are you making out with the ELDs? Everything is good there? No problem?
Yeah, so I have a great operations manager who does a really great job of, you know, making sure that we're compliant as far as that goes. One of my trucks is old enough that I don't need to run on ELDs.
Right.
And which is kind of nice, because if I have part-time guys running in that truck, it makes things a little bit easier. Because with my background, I know how to do paper logs. So that's easy for me to teach somebody, but ELDs is a little trickier. But yeah, I would say in general, we really have not had too many issues lately.
Oh, that's wonderful. Excellent.
Yeah.
And are you going to put that beautiful cab over on the road at some point, or is that just going to?
No. I'm actually going to sell that one, because, you know, what I have found is that, you know, as far as a backup truck, it doesn't make sense. Like when George was going to use the truck and fix it up and it was going to be kind of his fun toy and his backup truck, it made sense. But I just don't know that it makes sense for right now. But it is a very cool looking truck, I have to say.
Oh, it is. You know, the problem with it is trying to find somebody that is old enough to drive it, because most guys have never driven a cab over. And when you get in them for the first time, if you've never been in one or you haven't been in one in a long time, it's a little scary because you're sitting right over the road.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it. And I can actually see, like, we grew up with them, so we didn't know any different. And the first time I drove a conventional, I was actually all over the road. You know, it took me, you know, probably 100 miles to get used to driving a conventional. But, you know, sitting in a cab over now, although I really think they're cool, but it's just kind of like you're sitting over that steering wheel. You're looking right down the road. And it really is. And, you know, you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be tailgating anybody because, you know, you'll get to the crash first. So, you know, I totally, I totally get where you're coming from, but it's certainly a beautiful piece of equipment.
Oh, it is.
And, you know,
so
if
are you guys still?
Go ahead.
Are you guys still doing any much business with the animals and everything? I know that was something that George also enjoyed doing as well.
Yeah, we haven't done much with that lately. You know, we have a very good friend that is in that business. So typically, if he has stuff coming up that he needs help with, we'll do it with him. But there hasn't been much going on lately that he, you know, from the bigger animal side, that's been moving lately. So, I mean, we're completely open to it. And I mean, that's still something that we plan on doing. And I actually have a really great driver that has the capability that he can do that kind of stuff. So, so we'll definitely continue doing that.
Well, you certainly don't want to lose that individual if he's got that capability, you know, because it's such a unique skill set to have.
Right. Absolutely.
And now, what is your plans? Are you looking to grow this fleet? Are you happy at three? Or what are your plans, if you don't mind me asking?
I know I'm looking to grow it because I know myself, and I just think it's fun to grow and find new things and new opportunities. And I'm kind of at a point now where I have a lot of customers, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to take care of all of them unless I continue growing.
Right.
So, yeah, no, I definitely like to grow. I don't think I want 300 trucks, but...
Right, no. Do you see yourself growing more in the regional sense where you could put trucks on, where you're, you know, doing like that 200-mile radius sort of thing where your drivers could be home that night so you don't have to, because that gives you a much wider spectrum of drivers. People are very much aware of work-home balance, and people don't want to, they don't want to sleep on the road anymore. That's a huge issue throughout our industry, as you know, and that's why we're all having problems finding drivers. It's just not fun. You know, sleeping in a truck stop. People want to sleep in their own bed beside their own spouse and look at their kids in the morning.
Right. Potentially I could get to that point. I mean, right now, a lot of like my dedicated work is, you know, you might be gone three nights a week. So you're gone every other night. I mean, yeah, honestly, I think it would be great to get to that point. I just don't know if there's enough freight coming kind of out of where I am at the moment, going that short of distance. But with that said, I would not expect drivers to be on the road for, you know, 2 weeks at a time either. I mean, every now and then my drivers might be on the road for 5 or 6 days and then they're home. Very, very rarely is it ever longer than that. But most of the time they're home every other night. So it's a pretty good life balance.
Yeah, that's easier. You know what? That's easier. The more you can get them home, the easier it is to have them come to work for you. Now, have you done, I know that you and I spoke about this when we met at that restaurant at the time, and that's, you know, that goes back in November or so. Have you looked any more at doing work with brokers and third parties to get your trucks back or to fill them out or anything? Have you done anything along those lines?
It's on my list of things to do, but Chuck, quite honestly, I have been so busy that trying to add that piece, because again, it's about relationships, right? So 100%. I don't want to just use any broker. Like, I want to talk to a couple of them, develop a relationship with them, that kind of thing. My plan actually is when I open the warehouse, I also work at a college. So, my plan is when I open up the warehouse, then I would quit the other job, and then that's going to give me so much more time to be able to really focus on some of those kinds of things. I just think that would be really important.
Wow. Yeah, I can just imagine how this thing is just going to grow once you put all 8 cylinders under it. It's going to take off. You'll be a force to be reckoned with.
I hope so.
Well, you know, you've done such an amazing job, in 6 months. My God, this is a tough business, and things are, we have gone from, when we met 6 months ago, things were still okay. Now, overall, and I think you may be somewhat isolated from this just because of your particular business, but I'm not hesitant to say there is a continent-wide freight recession on right now.
Right.
And I don't know if you're feeling any of it. And it's funny because I was just talking to one of my business partners tonight. We're not down load count as far as the logistics and trucking industries. There are as many loads today as there was 12 months ago at this time. The problem is there's a whole lot more trucks to service that many loads because people went crazy, starting around 2017 and bought trucks and trailers like they were going to stop building them forever. And there's so much more equipment out there. So you have in certain segments of the market, unfortunately, you have too many trucks chasing too little freight. And that's putting pressure on rates. I don't know. How much of that are you seeing in upstate New York where you are?
My company personally is not seeing a lot of that. And I think it's just because of the segment that we're going after.
Right.
And we have our own customers as opposed to going out to brokers. So that relationship really makes the difference too, because I don't want to say my customers aren't looking at the rates, because they are, but they also know that the service that we're going to provide them is probably better than they're going to get anywhere else.
Of course.
We really value our customers. We really think it's important to take care of them.
And that's why you're surviving. It's funny. A lot of people don't get that, it's one thing to operate a trucking company. It's another thing to be able to get and keep steady customers and to grow and to grow them, and to get more business this week than you did last week. That's a real, you're doing everything right. You had some amazing training in your career starting at, working for the Werner Group. They're an amazing company. They do things right. That's how they've grown to be as behemoth as they are, with several different divisions. And look what you've accomplished. It's phenomenal.
Well, a lot of people tell me that I get to be the boss now, but I keep telling them that no, my customers are my boss. I still have a boss.
Yes, and we can never. That's a great point, and you can never lose sight of that. It's what they want, not what you want. And Kim, it's funny you say that. So many people that run trucking companies don't get that. They forget who signs the check. And those people, those are the ones that never last. It's the ones that are, I don't care whether you have, two trucks or 2,000 trucks. The customer's always right. The customer's king. And there's some customers, that we unfortunately have to lose because we can't make any money. They won't, their demands are sometimes so ridiculous that you just can't service that account. They become they come become a sacrifice to your organization. I remember when my son Doc came into our business after finishing business school, and he looked at our business, and we had one customer alone was giving us $3 million worth of LTL business every year.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, this is the stuff he was trained to do in business school. I thought this stuff was great. He ran the numbers. He came back, you know, he called me aside. We went in the boardroom. He said, you got to see these numbers. You know what? We're doing $3 million worth of business with this guy, but it's costing us about $3.4 million to do it. We can't afford to keep this guy, you know, unless he can, you
yep.
know, unless he's willing to cover our downside plus some. We got to make some money with him. And yeah, it was great base freight, but we needed
right.
more than that. So, you know, you get this. And you know what? We
yep.
we lost that customer and we never looked back because we didn't
wow.
need his nonsense. So, you know, that's the other thing we all have to look at with customers. They're, you know, we have to be loyal to our customers, but always keep your eye on the prize and make sure you're making money on that customer.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's like I say, setting expectations, right? So if a customer wants me to do something that we just can't do, or for whatever price they want us to do it for, then, you know, unfortunately, I'm going to tell them, you know, sorry, can't do it.
Yes. You know, nobody needs customers that, you know, that are going to drag you down.
Right.
It's just,
I totally agree.
It won't get you where you're going. So are you out beating on doors of local businesses, or are you doing mass marketing digitally? What are you doing, or just using the yellow pages? What, well, I guess there's no yellow pages anymore, but trade rags, what do you do for leads?
Yeah.
I do all of the
above. So actually, yeah, well, I mean, so currently there's a team of three of us that will go out to various customers, and sometimes we'll make cold calls. And so we beat on doors. We have personal conversations with people. If we can't get in to see them personally, then we'll make phone calls. I am in the process of setting up where I want to start doing an email campaign. So maybe I pick an area and we do an email campaign, and then, you know, after that email goes out, okay, well, now I go beat on the door, you know,
right.
kind of combining a little bit of kind of digital marketing with, because I personally think that you cannot replace the face-to-face. Like, the face-to-face 100%. Is so important. That's just more my style. I just think it's so much more important. But I think it's great to have, like, the digital marketing to kind of, like, open the door a little bit, or just introduce yourself or that kind of thing.
The challenge with digital marketing is that I know myself, you know, I come in every day and I've got all sorts of, you know, spam filters and all sorts of things. And I come in every morning and there's 200 emails waiting for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I have to go through them and I have to decide which ones do I put in the junk, which ones are deleted, and which ones do I block, you know, which ones do I read. You know, and that takes
right.
time.
Right.
And,
oh, absolutely.
You know, so I think you have to really, if you're going to do digital marketing, I don't know what your thoughts are, Tim and Rico, but you really have to have something that sticks out somewhere.
Well, definitely.
You know, whether,
or, go ahead.
No, well, whether it's a lane saying, well, now servicing from Rochester to Albany or whatever, so you catch their eye rather than Blue Heron Logistics for all your trucking needs. I think you have to.
Right.
I think you have to just hit them with something so they go, oh my God, yes, we do ship there.
Right.
You have to hit their need button in order for
right.
them to react.
Well, or I mean, you know, another thing that we started doing was using LinkedIn and just, because you can get a subscription with LinkedIn where you can kind of go in and look at different people and their titles, and maybe you just start up just kind of a personal conversation, which it takes more time than just kind of doing this mass email. But
right.
now you've kind of started a conversation, and then it's like, hey, can I give you a call? So,
yep.
you know, I again, for me, anything that's going to get me in front of the customer personally, I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Look,
and
we're getting close to the time. Kim, and as I know that you've got quite a bit of background in the trucking industry and especially in sales, but what would you advise to someone that has like this big fear of they know that they would like to do they would like to get out there, they know that they want to like I say, get more customers or get a customer. What would you advise someone to help them maybe get over that fear, or something that may you know, when you very first started out, you may have had a little, I don't know if you may or may not have had some anxiety, but if someone was having a little anxiety behind that, what kind of advice would you advise them, and what kind of advice would you give them?
Well, I would say the first thing is come up with your elevator pitch, right? So come up with kind of how you would describe your company in just a few sentences so people kind of understand what you do. And then, you know, really – you know, let's say you're going to make a cold call, you know, really you're just going to go in, you're going to introduce yourself, and really all you want to do is find out the person that you should talk to. Okay, so that's one call. That's not a big deal. And then when you're in front of the person that you want to talk to, really it's write down what questions you want answered. And really it's about listening. Just listen to what they have to say. So you really don't do a lot of talking in your first interaction with the customer. It's really finding out about what they need. Because then you got to go back home and you have to evaluate, okay, well, here's their needs. Can I take care of that? Another trick that, you know, I've used is if I'm nervous, I might bring somebody with me. You know, maybe I have a friend that may not know my business as well as I do, but is really personable and really is good at getting people talking, I might bring a friend with me. Because now you don't feel as nervous. You don't feel alone. So that's another really good trick I've done.
It's a great idea. I only did that one once, and I happened to be in a small town in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, on a Saturday with a good friend of mine. And I said, we're driving by this customer's place, and I said, hey, I've done business with that guy. Let's just go and see if he's there. It was a Saturday, and we went in and we had coffee with the guy. You know, it was just like two old friends meeting.
Right.
you know, and, so that's a great idea. I don't know if it works for everybody, but I like that.
Yeah, so just, I mean, my advice too is it's not a sales call. It's not. You're just gathering information. You just want to know about their business. And people love to talk about their business and talk about themselves. So just
right.
Don't look at it as a sales call.
Ask questions, right? Hello.
So yeah, I want to ask those questions and get that line of questioning going for people that are listening in right now, that because that was one of the things that we always would get from George, and that was one of the inspirations that we would always gain from him is
right.
You know, if you want something different, you got to be willing to do something different. And unfortunately, we have gotten fat, dumb, and happy and lazy by just dealing with brokers and just accepting what it is that, you know, fighting for every little nickel, dime, and penny that we can scratch out of getting from brokers. But but the thing about it, and George was very proud that you know, he never really even pulled any broker freight, and he was doing quite well without having to pull broker freight. I mean, even if he would take a long haul somewhere, he would always, you know, he would always kind of let us know that, hey, he made enough money going out there that he didn't have to make anything coming. He could just turn right back around and just come on back home. And that's, you know, people were sometimes a little envious of that or didn't know exactly how to take that. You know, I think that sometimes they may have misjudged the way, because sometimes when somebody's doing something that you wish you could do, sometimes people get a little envious about that or whatever. But George is very proud of the fact that he was able to do that and really was just matter of fact about, hey, just if you want to be able to do that, then go out and make happen what it is that you want to see happen, and don't be afraid and unapologetic about how to go about your business. But at the same time, be very professional. You know, he was very adamant about the professionalism that he brought to the table and the care in which he took care of his customers. And, you know, it's just very inspiring. You know, I'm glad to hear that you guys are doing well, just still thriving, and, you know, and the spirit of Blue Heron lives on and is continuing to grow. That warms my heart. I can't tell you enough. That really does warm my heart. And
I appreciate that.
I appreciate you for taking time out to come on and maybe drop a couple of gems and jewels on our listeners again, and maybe hopefully inspire someone to say, hey, I can get out and try to do these things as well. So thank you once again for coming on to the show. The family, Sam and everybody's doing well?
Yep, everybody's doing really well. Yeah, and, you know, they've all been a part of helping the business grow, and, it's everybody's kind of made a little bit of a turn, and we're making things happen.
I'm so proud of you guys.
Great.
I really am.
Thank you. Thank you.
Big kudos and hats off to you guys.
You know, I'm happy to help anytime I can help any of the listeners, because one thing George and I always said, we really want to lift people up. Like, that's especially this industry. We really want to lift up this industry. It's really important.
Well, that's wonderful.
Absolutely.
And generous of you.
Absolutely. So Kim, I don't know if you, I don't know if any of our guys is anything, but anything you, in closing remarks, anything you want to leave us with before we get out of here for tonight?
No, I just want to say, thank you for having me. And all of you that are out there, just go make a sales call. Even if it's super scary, just go make one. Just make that your goal, one. And then maybe the next week you can do two. And then you'll start seeing that your customer base will grow. Promise you.
Absolutely. Great advice. Chuck, we know it's that time of the evening. Tell the good people how they can get in contact with you.
Well, you can email me. It's just chuck@traffix.com, or you can call me at 800-388-4352. My extension is 203. You got to press that, or you're going to go through voicemail hell around this place. Or you can catch me on Instagram, Chuck Snow CEO. Send me a private message. It's my goal to just help people in the industry, in the profession, anything anybody needs, if they need some advice, whatever, if anybody wants to get set up with Traffix as a carrier or they're having a tough time, they need to figure out how to negotiate something, give me a call. I'm here to help you. It just gives me that opportunity to give back to an industry and a profession and people that have done so much for me personally and for my family and our business.
All right. Well, thank you guys again. So this is Rico Muhammad. This is the Race and Lanes podcast. We are getting ready to sign off. Next week we have attorney extraordinaire Hank Seaton will be joining us on the Race and Lanes podcast. So if you got questions, legal questions, contract questions, all that good stuff, make sure you go ahead and jot them down. You can shoot us a note over on the Race and Lanes Facebook page. If you're afraid to come on to the show or whatever, you're a little bashful, we won't bite, but you can go ahead and send the questions over there. We'll be sure to ask them and get them over to Hank. And with that being said, we want to thank you guys, the listeners, for taking time out of your schedule to make sure you tune in, listen in, telling a friend to tell a friend about the podcast. We're constantly growing, even on the guys that are listening on the recorded show. We appreciate you. And we will talk to you same time, same place next week. God bless you. Good night. keep it in between the mustard and mayonnaise as always.
Catch on the flip-flop.
Good night, everybody.